I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Do us a favor, lock in this phone number, 913-576-7610. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by our next guest. He is the professor. He is with 710 Seattle ESPN. John Clayton joins us on the show. John, really appreciate you coming on.
Hey, good to be with you guys.
Good. So let's start here. We talk all the time about who the best quarterback in the NFL is, Patrick Mahomes. You see a good one in Russell Wilson. How would you rank these three, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Russell Wilson?
Yeah, I think they're the best two quarterbacks in the league. Right now, I still have Mahomes slightly over Russell Wilson. But the way that Russell Wilson's starting, you know, this may be the year he finally gets the MVP he's sought for the longest period of time, because he started off completing 84-plus percent of his passes, 9 touchdown passes in 2 games. He's got a 9-yard average. But again, you know, I still look at Mahomes as he's obviously the best quarterback the last 2 years. Then, of course, on the young quarterbacks, I put Deshaun Watson a little bit ahead of Lamar Jackson, but I guess we'll find out if Lamar Jackson is able to beat the Chiefs coming up in this weekend's game, then we might have to readjust things. But overall, I think at 1 and 2, depending on which way you want to go, it's Mahomes and Wilson, and I'd say right now Mahomes still has the edge. The guy's incredible.
John, that's interesting, because at least on this show, we have Lamar pretty far ahead of Deshaun Watson. Why do you have it the other way?
Just because I think he's the better quarterback, because he's got, you know, better accuracy. He's still a big time. And really, the difference is, and again, Lamar's catching up pretty fast. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, Watson can carry a team, where at least in the case of Jackson, he's got a great running game around him, decent offensive line, and some decent weapons. But what Deshaun Watson's been able to do is take a declining Houston Texans team and keep it still in a playoff mode. Now, it's probably caught up to him this year, and part of that's because, you know, they've been putting so much money into the offense in Houston that it's cost the defense. And you watched it in Week 1, they can't stop the run anymore. They're questionable with their pass rush. They have questions in the secondary. And, of course, it doesn't help when you start off in the season against the 3 best teams in the AFC, Kansas City, and then you come back and you have to play Baltimore, and then you play Pittsburgh, because I think Pittsburgh's going to have a bounce-back year. But you saw in the first 2 games, even with Watson and not even getting the ball downfield as much as he could, I just think the guy right now is good, and he certainly earned a $39 million a year contract that was slightly below the Patrick Mahomes deal.
Right now we're talking to John Clayton of 710 Seattle ESPN Radio. Always good to catch up with the professor, John Clayton. I'm curious your thoughts on the Chiefs' last game, because they didn't really visually dominate the game. They weren't their typical selves, but good teams find a way to win in those types of situations. What did you make of the Chiefs' wins over the Chargers?
Well, okay, what I look at is that's why I have Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback in the league. He's now got, 6 consecutive games, where going back to last year, where he's overcome double-digit deficits. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, we haven't seen a stretch like that, but that's just absolutely amazing to be down 10 or more points and go 6 straight games all through the playoffs, the Super Bowl, start of the season, and be able to win. I mean, that's incredible. But I think the reason it's incredible is that what you can see is that still is a little bit of a drop-off on defense. Defense in general league-wide is down right now because, you know, teams are averaging 25.15 points a game, you know, because of the pandemic and everything else. Offenses are ahead of defenses, and so you have more shootouts. And so because of that, Patrick Mahomes is comfortable in that. And you watched him last week, as you've watched him now for the longest period of time. He's just so good and so calm in the tough situations. You know, the game slowed down to him faster than just about any other quarterback in NFL history, and so he's so comfortable just waiting for that last drive to be able to get the victory, whether it's going to be a field goal drive in overtime or get that touchdown drive to put him ahead. But, you know, you can see that they survived so far with the cornerback problems that keep the cornerback position short, because what they finished with three cornerbacks that were left because of all the injuries and stuff that's happened, Breshad Breeland and all that stuff, you know, and then Frank Clark had an illness and all that. But, you know, they need to tighten some things up on defense, but still they're in great shape, particularly if they can win this game against Baltimore.
Hey, Professor, being out in Seattle as long as you have, you've gotten a chance to see a lot of Frank Clark. A couple of questions. One, has his health, especially this stomach thing, been an ongoing issue? And two, do you consider to be Frank Clark an elite pass rusher?
Yeah, there's no question Frank Clark's an elite pass rusher. I don't know what the stomach thing really is. I know he used to have some problems with his wrist because a lot of times using his hands, he'd end up getting some wrist injuries, and that kind of not slowed him down, but were painful, and he'd have to deal with it because you'd see him after plays and he's shaking his hand and all that stuff. But no, there's no question he's an elite pass rusher because he has the ability in most seasons to be able to get 10 or more sacks. But the stomach thing, I don't know what this one is.
John, you mentioned the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I'm with you. I think that they're a really talented team who's on the come up. Do you think that it's Kansas City, Baltimore, and everybody else? Like, is the game on Monday night a preview of the AFC Championship game?
No, I think what it is that it's Kansas City, Baltimore, and Pittsburgh, and then everybody else. And then you start throwing in Buffalo. Maybe you throw in the New England Patriots. Definitely you throw in Tennessee. But I think once you get to past Pittsburgh, there's a little bit of a gap. I mean, you still got a young quarterback in Josh Allen. I just watched Cam Newton have an incredible performance against Seattle, completing 71% of his passes. So you can see that they still are going to be in the hunt. But I still think the best three teams, and the reason I keep on saying Pittsburgh is that, number one, they've got a top five defense. Number two, Ben Roethlisberger's back, and he's showing no problems with his elbow. Juju Smith-Schuster is doing well at the wide receiver position. And so when you have a top five defense and a quarterback as good as Ben and an easy schedule, because remember, unlike what you're seeing at the start of the season with the Chiefs and the AFC North has the easiest schedule in football. I know if you go back to last year's records, if you take away the two Baltimore games that they have to play, Pittsburgh plays a 398 schedule. And on top of that, they play just about more young quarterbacks than anybody else in football. And when you have Ben Roethlisberger, that defense, and going against a young quarterback, then you have a good chance to win.
Right now we're talking to John Clayton of 710 Seattle ESPN Radio. You just saw the New England Patriots. You didn't put them in the group with Kansas City, Baltimore, and Pittsburgh. I understand it. We've only seen two games of Cam Newton. What was your impression of Cam and the Patriots and just watching them? Because Cam looks healthy. Cam looks motivated. This is the best we've seen him since he won an NFL MVP.
Oh, agreed. I think that that was the best performance I've seen him because, not only did he have the 11 runs, he's had now, 26 runs in two games, and he's running well, but he's throwing so much better. And I think two things have helped him. He's doing better footwork things on the field. He's throwing more accurately because of the footwork improvement. I think that Josh McDaniels has come up with some very creative plays, but they fell behind. It looked like it was going to be pretty much a second half blowout, but then he was able to will his way back. But he looks good now. You can see there's a little bit of leakage in their defense, as there should be. When you start to take five key guys out of any defense, it's tough, and particularly what they ended up losing at linebacker. They lost four of their top five linebackers. They lost Danny Shelton, a good run-stopping defensive tackle. And so that had to play into things. But the interesting thing is they've got the best three coverage man-to-man cornerbacks in football. But, when you go two tight ends against them, then it's a little bit more of a problem because they have a little less strength and a little less bulk to be able to stop the run. So that's why Seattle came out after having 38 dropbacks in the past the first week against Atlanta and only 20 runs. They ran the ball 30 times. They got 154 yards, and then DK Metcalf did the best against Stephon Gilmore we've seen in a couple of years because they're both physical, but Metcalf had five catches, 92 yards, and a 38-yard touchdown pass.
John, last thing before you get out of here, Monday Night Football, Chiefs and Ravens. Ravens a 3-point favorite. How do you see the game playing out?
I still put the money on Kansas City because, again, I just think with Patrick Mahomes – he's just so good. You know, the one thing that Cleveland has, I mean, that's the interesting thing. That's why I'm sure the odds makers are going with Baltimore, because, you know, they've just had blowouts in just about everything they've done. And for the Chiefs to win, it's going to be a comeback. And so, but I still go with the fact that if you have the best quarterback usually wins.
John, really quick, what do you make of all the injuries that are happening in the NFL? You've covered this league for a long time. You know coaches, you know players. We haven't really seen, I think, the catastrophic season-ending injuries the way we did in week two. What do you make of everything that's happened the last week in the NFL?
Yeah, because it was the worst. Week two was the worst week I've seen for injuries, and that covered as hard as anybody in football. But it was so predictable. This is what everybody said was going to happen. You go back to 2011 when there was no off-season program, and I know J.C. Treader of the Union came out and put these stats out, which are 100% accurate. There was a 44% increase in hamstring injuries. They doubled the number of Achilles tendon tears. There was more than 50 ACL tears. And so you see this in every training camp. You see it all through the season. It's like, okay, when you go to the first OTA, there's going to be 3 to 4 Achilles tears, or you have ACL tears. Then you ramp it up and you go into the mini camp, and there's going to be the same number and an increase in the number of Achilles and ACL tears. And then when you start the regular season, you see the same thing. So this is one that was the most predictable thing in the world. And with the damage done in week two, I'm anticipating there's going to be 25 to 30 starters that aren't going to be back on the field because of injuries suffered in week two. And that's going to devastate some teams like San Francisco. Dallas has some problems. So, again, but this was all everybody thought was going to happen, and it's happened.
That is John Clayton of 710 Seattle, ESPN Radio, the professor, one of the best NFL voices around. John, really appreciate you making time for us today. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, thank you.
That is John Clayton joining us today on the show. He said some really interesting stuff about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Are you ready to put them in the same conversation with Kansas City and Baltimore? We'll get to that next. And this is the biggest Monday Night Football game we've seen since Chiefs and Rams. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio. Coming up at the bottom of the hour every Wednesday, we are joined by Rich Gannon. Our MVP quarterback, Rich Gannon, will be on the show coming up at 4:30. We are full speed ahead to Chiefs and Ravens. Go ahead and lock in the phone number, 913-576-7610. We just had John Clayton, the professor, on the show. He agrees with you. He thinks that Pittsburgh is the third best team in the AFC.
It's Kansas City, Baltimore, and Pittsburgh, and then everybody else. And then you start throwing in Buffalo, maybe you throw in the New England Patriots, definitely you throw in Tennessee. But I think once you get to past Pittsburgh, there's a little bit of a gap. I mean, you still got a young quarterback in Josh Allen. I just watched Cam Newton have an incredible performance against Seattle, completing 71% of his passes. So you can see that they still are going to be in the hunt.
I think the fun of this debate is we all are on very different sides when it comes to who the third best team is, or maybe the gap that exists between all of these teams in the AFC. If you're willing to say that Pittsburgh is the third best team in the AFC, I'm not going to fight you. We've only seen two games. I would just strongly push back on that there's a big gap between where Pittsburgh is and the Bills are. I'd push back on that there's a huge gap between where Pittsburgh is and where New England is. Like, are we really evaluating our New England Patriots opinion based on them and their inability to get 1 yard in the game? Because if they win that football game and they beat Seattle, people are talking about them being the best team in the NFL or in the argument. So we're really going to base it off that they didn't convert the one play. Like, to me, that just seems really reactionary. I think there's two elite teams at the top. We're going to see those two teams play on Monday Night Football, and it's not going to change my opinion one way or the other. Those are still the two best teams in the AFC. It's kind of like one of those college basketball non-con games. It's just fun to see Kansas play Kentucky in the early part of the season. But after that, I would put those other four teams all in the blender. Are we really certain that Pittsburgh is that much better than Tennessee at this point in the season, or that much better than New England or Buffalo? I don't think we're at that point yet.
Better than Buffalo, better than Tennessee, and here's why. Because if you think about the best teams really in football, but like, just for the sake of this conversation, say the AFC, the best teams are the teams that have the best quarterback and the best coach. Like, that's what the Chiefs have. They've got Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. You could argue maybe second best coach, best quarterback. John Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson. You could argue maybe third best coach, second best quarterback. Some of those other teams with Buffalo, I like Sean McDermott, but does anybody say that about Josh Allen? I like Ryan Tannehill, but is anybody saying the combination of Ryan Tannehill and Mike Vrabel is one of the great quarterback coach combinations of all time? You move over to the NFC. That's why I think the best team is Seattle, because they got Russell Wilson and they got Pete Carroll in place. So I don't have a problem if you want to put New England in that conversation. The difference to me is it's year one with Cam Newton, and we've only seen a couple of games, but they certainly fit the criteria I'm giving you, proven quarterback, proven coach, but not as much as Pittsburgh.
I just feel like right now what we're all doing to maybe validate our opinion is we tear down the schedule of a team that we don't like or don't think that high on, and then we build up another team. Like, has Pittsburgh beaten anybody? Like, some of the arguments that we can make for teams in the AFC of, oh, who have they played? Who have they beaten? Pittsburgh has beaten the New York Giants, who they were what on your list of 10 worst teams in the NFL?
Three.
Third on the list. And the Denver Broncos, in which their quarterback got hurt in the early part of the game. The three quarterbacks that this vaunted Pittsburgh Steelers defense has gone up against is Daniel Jones, Drew Lock, and Jeff Driscoll. I'm not saying that Pittsburgh's not a good team, but we just heard from the professor, John Clayton. They got a bad schedule this year that we expect them to take advantage of. Pittsburgh plays the Giants. They play the Broncos. They play Houston. And right now, this is the perfect time to play Houston. They got Philadelphia, another team that was on your top 10 list, worst teams in the NFL. They got Cleveland. They got Cincy twice. They play Washington this year. I think that Pittsburgh, I don't know if we can evaluate them until week four. They play at Tennessee. We'll find out everything we need to know about Ben Roethlisberger, at least this early point of the season, and Tennessee. I don't want to hear Tennessee's not good if they beat Pittsburgh. We got to start talking about Tennessee a little bit differently, especially because since they've made that switch to Ryan Tannehill, Tennessee has put themselves in this conversation. Are they in the Kansas City-Baltimore conversation? No, but they have put themselves in the same conversation with the Pittsburgh Steelers if they beat them in 2 weeks.
There's just such a small sample size after 2 weeks that, to me, you're basically saying, did they win both their games or did they lose? And that's the separation, what makes them a good team and a bad team. I mean, so you just made the point about Cam Newton and the Patriots. If they get in at the end zone, the end of the game, Cam sneaks it in, and they're 2-0. We're talking about Seattle maybe being the fourth or best team in the NFC instead of being the best. Early on, that's what happens. How about the Chargers? If the Chargers don't punt for it, they end up scoring a touchdown and win that game. Now they're 2-0, and the Chiefs are looking up at them in the division, and we're talking about Rob being a genius. Instead, we're not doing that. But you get my point that through 2 weeks, it's tough to look and say, well, they haven't beat anybody or they've beat good teams. Houston's another example. Can we say Houston sucks? We might be able to say they're not elite, but when the first 3 weeks, you got to play the Steelers, the Chiefs, and the Ravens, I don't think we can really get an actual impression of what team. We know Kansas City's good. We know Baltimore's good. The rest of these teams, Buffalo, Tennessee, Pittsburgh, I think you need a few weeks to determine if they're actually good or not.
And that's why, to me, we got to start evaluating these teams not based on who they play, but how they are playing. Like, Baltimore has not played a murderer's row so far. You're right. None of us really know on Houston because they've started a schedule that I think 24 teams in the NFL start 0-2 if they play the same schedule that the Texans.
They destroyed them, though, in style points matter.
Baltimore's playing good football. The Patriots are playing good football.
Yeah.
I don't care that they lost to the Seattle Seahawks. They are playing better football than the Bears, who are 2-0.
Sure.
So to me going this, well, who's 2-0, who's 1-1, that's how we're ranking it. Use your eyes. Use your feel. How are they look? How are they playing? How does their defense match up? How does their offense match up? In a season in which we knew that some teams were going to start off slow, who's starting slow? Who has continued what they've done so far? That's why when I say with Tennessee looks the same like they did at the end of the season. Like, they don't look like they're much different. They don't look like they have taken a step back. They've just maintained the level of play. That's why I'm willing to entertain the possibility that Tennessee is good. They got to continue to prove it on the field. As I said, they play Pittsburgh here coming up in 2 weeks. That's the game that I think we're all waiting for with Tennessee. You have played Indy and you have played Jacksonville your first two games of the season. You play a legitimate playoff team, a legitimate contender. How do you look?
Well, it doesn't get any more legitimate than whoever wins this game. You know, like, you can talk about, well, who cares if you beat Pittsburgh? We don't know what they are, Buffalo or Tennessee or Indy or Denver. We're two games into this thing. I can tell you this, even though it's only going to be week three, whoever wins this game, if it's the Chiefs or the Ravens, every other team, C-Dot, at least in the AFC, looks at them like, I don't know how the hell we're going to beat them. They're undefeated. They beat the other team. They've got the best quarterback. I assume that's what we'll be calling the guy, whoever has the better game coming up on Monday night. the snowball really starts a rolling downhill for the winner of this Monday night game.
I'm just not really going to change my opinion too much unless one team really gets blown out or doesn't come out and execute.
And like I'd be very surprised that happens. I'm pretty sure it's going
to
be
like
a close
I said,
game.
To me, this is like an early season college basketball game. We've seen Kansas play Duke early on in the season. We've seen Duke look better than Kansas. It's no indicator of how it's going to look at the end of the season. I'm watching this game for pure entertainment value. Kansas City is a 12 or 13 win team. Baltimore, to me, is a 12 or 13 win team.
I don't think they're looking at it this way. I think they're looking at it like whoever wins this game likely is going to be the number one seed and give us the easiest path. It's not just another game.
I agree, but I'm also saying is I'm not going to say, well, hey, Baltimore is now the team to beat. No, you're still the defending Super Bowl champions. If the Chiefs lose a hard-fought 37-34 game, it doesn't drastically change my opinion on where the Kansas City Chiefs are. They are one of the elite teams in the NFL, and if you are going to win the Super Bowl, which you cannot win in Week 3, you need to go through Patrick Mahomes to do so. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by our MVP, Rich Gannon of CBS Sports. Rich Gannon joins us next. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app. Do us a favor, lock in the text line number 913-576-7610. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City and talk about Chiefs and Ravens. Let's preview Chiefs and Ravens with our MVP. He is also with CBS Sports. Rich Gannon joins us on the show. Rich, thanks a lot for coming on today. How's it going, man?
Guys, thanks for having me. After another big Kansas City win, that's awesome.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer that good teams find a way to win in the capacity in which the Kansas City Chiefs did. They did not play their best game. I don't even think they played a B game, but they ultimately find themselves the victor at the end.
Yeah, you know, just going back and watching it, I've got the Chargers this week, so I watched the game twice. And Chiefs could tell they got off to kind of a sluggish start, you know, having to punt the ball in the first possession. And then, you know, you look at, you know, Justin Herbert. I mean, I'm just listening to the announcers. I mean, no one had any idea. And now we're finding out that obviously Tyrod Taylor had the rib injury after week one. He got injected prior to the start of the game by the team physician to kind of numb the some of the pain from the rib injury, and they punctured a lung. And so, you know, we find out that no one knew. Even Justin Herbert didn't know that he was going to start that game. So you could see, and he got off to a good start, and there was some momentum, and you could tell that, I think from a defensive perspective, certainly that was a shocker, I'm sure, to Coach Spagnuolo and even Coach Andy Reid. But offensively, wasn't great early, but boy, you know, they don't panic. I think that, to me, is what was so impressive. You know, and you wouldn't expect a guy like Mahomes to panic, but, you know, the team, I thought, showed patience, didn't panic, and obviously to come from behind and win like that, a dramatic win on the road with the way it ended, was pretty spectacular.
Why do you think, Rich, they've gotten off to these slow starts? Because it's not like it was just a Sunday thing or just a this year thing or just a playoff thing. It's been a long time now since this team's gotten off to a hot start. With all the talent they have, why do you think that is?
It's a great question. I'm sure Andy and the coaching staff are trying to get it figured out. You know, they go to great lengths. I've gone in and done Kansas City games where Andy's actually handed me the first 15 plays in the game. You know, I think he trusts our crew, and he's had fun with it. He doesn't do it a lot, but he's done it in some games, the week 16 games, those type of things. So they put a lot of time into the script. You want to make sure to get everyone off to a good start. You want to get, you know, your playmakers, Kelsey and Hill and these guys, touches. You want to get them into the rhythm of the game, get the back going, the running game, establish the run. And, of course, most importantly, you want to get Patrick into a good rhythm early, right? Get him confidence, get him some completions, get him kind of feeling it. And it, for whatever reason, all it takes is a penalty. All it takes is a drop ball. All it takes is a missed third down opportunity. Now all of a sudden you punt it away and you're struggling a little bit. It just seemed to me they were out of sync a little bit. They missed some plays early, some opportunities. And yet, you know, like I said, I think what I was most impressed with when I went back and watched it, the six scrambles that Patrick Mahomes had, I think for 54 yards or 64 yards, whatever it was, especially the ones on third down. Now, he converted three of them. One was called back on a penalty. It would have been five. I'm sorry, he converted four of them. So four of his runs on third down moved the chains. And there was one that was called back, and he actually had a run of 21-yard scamper on third 20. I mean, they're big plays, guys. I mean, they're transformational plays in the game where your quarterback can make a play on third down and move the chains. And to me, those were significant. We always talk about his arm talent, his playmaking ability, his vision. But yet, those plays, to me, were difference makers in the game.
Right now, we're talking to our MVP, Rich Gannon. He also is a broadcaster for CBS Sports. What were your impressions of Justin Herbert? And you certainly would know how difficult it is to come in cold. What challenges does it present to not know you're going to be the starter like Herbert and then go out and play effectively?
You know, I think it actually turned out really good that he didn't know. Like, I mean, basically, he had no idea. In fact, Coach Lynn said that they told him in the locker room when they came out, and, you know, he was like, "You're kidding me, right?" And I'm like, "No, he's going to start." So I think you're just running on adrenaline at that point. I mean, you don't have time to think about it. You don't have time to get nervous. You just kind of go out there and play. And I think a couple throws early, he had some success early. You know, he runs for the touchdown. I think the team felt comfortable with him. As I look back at my notes, a couple of things that really jumped out to me. His poise, obviously his composure. He seemed like he had a very good handle and command of the plan, very good in the huddle. He wasn't allowed to delay games, those type of things. He was comfortable with things, the line of scrimmage. You could see him making the protection adjustment, making the calls. Communication looked really good. You know, I think there was a lot of missed tackling by the Chiefs early in the game. You know, I thought, you know, when you play a team like the Chargers with Keenan Allen, the backs like Eckler and Kelly, they usually make the first defender miss. You've got to be able to tackle in space. The Chiefs did not do that particularly well. In fact, if you go back and look at the Week 1 game, I didn't think they tackled particularly well in that game either. So, you know, you factor all that in, and then you say to yourself, like, why was this game close, and why, you know, why did the Chiefs have to come back and make a couple of kicks into the game? And I think that had a lot to do with it. I mean, it's not just one particular thing. It was a combination of things that really led to what turned out to be a dramatic come from behind victory on the road.
Rich, if you had to take an AFC West quarterback and you can't take Patrick Mahomes, let's say, as your guy for the next 2 or 3 years, you're taking Herbert, you're taking Locke, or you're taking Carr?
You know, guys, I've watched both. I've Carr Week 1, and obviously watched the game on Monday night. And let me just say this about Carr, because there's a lot of critics, and I've been one of them. The thing that you can't get over is a one-loss record. I mean, it's not good. He's got a lot more losses than he does wins. But last year, he threw for, I think, 70.4%, second only to Drew Brees. You know, touchdown interception ratio was good. He threw for the most yards, most completions, you know, highest completion percentage in his career. The last 2 years, they've had a really good offensive line. They go out and get Josh Jacobs. And we talked about that they've made the wide receivers, the two young receivers. And then you get this Darren Waller, who I'm not going to compare him to Travis Kelce because he's different, but he's really a wide receiver guy playing the quarter of the tight end position. And that's really helped. You know, it's really helped like Carr. And I'm just saying right now, like, you look at Carr's last two games, he's really played well. He's kind of come into his own. And I think he's got a chance to have a really good season. They're not very good on defense. That's going to be the problem. They have to score 35 points every week, I think, to be competitive. But it's hard to pick a rookie quarterback. And the kid Locke is, you know, he's out with an injury. He got hurt last week. I did the game last week in Pittsburgh. I would say behind him, I think it's Carr right now.
Right now, we're talking to our MVP, Rich Gannon. Let's talk about the huge Monday night affair between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens. You have studied both of these quarterbacks. You've watched both of these quarterbacks. What development and growth have you seen in both Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson?
You know, it's so hard to, like, say, like, where have you seen the growth of Mahomes, right? Because you say, well, the minute you start saying, well, he's better than this, he's better than that, you say, well, yeah, but he was pretty good at that the first time around. You know what I mean? I mean, the guy is such a, you know, I was just reading something this morning about Andy comparing him a little bit to Brett Favre in terms of, you know, tear your insides out. He's, you know, his mindset, and I think the way he sees the entire field, and then, you know, just his demeanor on game days. I think it's a lot easier for me to say, where have I seen the improvement of Lamar Jackson than Patrick Mahomes, and I say that in a complimentary way, because honestly, it's nitpicking when you start talking about Mahomes' improvement. I mean, the guy won a Super Bowl last year. He's an MVP. I mean, the guy is he's probably the best quarterback in the league right now. I mean, I think when you look at overall game, if you're talking to 32 general managers, I'd be surprised if many wouldn't just say, I'll take the kid in Kansas City. You know, that, you know what I mean? When you look at how young he is, how explosive he is, how dynamic he is, is all the intangibles that he loved, the quarterback position, his leadership skills. I mean, you just go down, check every box when you get to Patrick Mahomes. Now, Lamar Jackson, where I think you're seeing some improvement is an overall understanding of defensive football, coverages and those type of things, protections. I think you're seeing a little bit better sense of the footwork in the pocket. He's not a pure drop-back guy, and it's not that kind of offense. A lot of what he does is he creates on his own. He runs around, he plays with his legs, he throws the ball down the field. He's pretty accurate when his feet are set. But he's got to get better at functioning from the pocket. And he's got to get better in games where they have to throw the ball when they're playing from behind. Now, last year that didn't really happen, but the last two times they've been to the postseason, both losses, they fell behind, and they just that's not who they are. They don't want him throwing the ball 35 times a game. He's not the most accurate guy, doesn't have the best footwork in terms of a rhythm passer when it gets to be third down. Third down can be a challenge for him. If you take away his primary receiver, he can struggle a little bit. So that's, to me, that's where I look at Lamar Jackson and say, where can he become a more complete quarterback? I think it's in the passing game, better understanding protection, better understanding the coverages, better understanding situational football, and functioning better in third down and those critical situations. Third and 2-4, he's terrific, because if it's not there, he just runs for it. You start getting the third 6+, third and 8+, third and 10+. You know, that's where I think he has some challenges and some struggles. He still has to, areas of his game where he still has to refine.
Rich, you're right, where Baltimore is a team that wants to run it 35 times, 40 times. They want to establish that run, and they want to impose their will. Break down for us what makes the Ravens' running attack so good.
Yeah, I think you have to start with the personnel, right? And I think you can look at the backs, the people who are touching the ball. I think you start there. And honestly, it starts with the quarterback, because – you know, they have designed runs for him. He's got runs where he just decides to pull it down and take off. You know, Mark Ingram is a old school throwback, tough, downhill, knock you backwards, physical finisher, that type of runner. You know, Edwards is a guy that can come in and do some things. But here is the key to it all. And you're not going to hear this from a lot of other people, but here is the key to their running game. They've got five good offensive linemen, big guys that knock you backwards, but they really have seven. So what they do is they bring in Nick Boyle, okay, 86. And 86 is really a glorified tight end, a tackle. He's 275 pounds, okay, and he can almost 280. He can knock you backwards. And then if that's not enough, they've got another guy that is just as big and nasty and powerful. And he plays defensive line, and he lines up in the backfield, and he's a guy that I really think is pretty amazing, because you know, just his size. You know, you get seven big bodies on the field, and you know, it just makes it hard. You know, so you know, they use defensive linemen in the backfield. You know, they put a lot of big bodies back in there, and they get seven big bodies on the field, and they run it right at you. And so, to me, that's a big part of it. They use multiple tight end usage. You'll see two tight ends, three tight ends. They get a lot of big bodies out there, and they run it at you. And so, if you're the Chiefs, you have to get off a block. You have to stop the running game, because if you don't, you're going to see heavy doses of it. The way the Chiefs win this game, obviously, they've got to do what they do on offense. I think they match up well. But they've got to be able to turn this into a passing game. They've got to make the Ravens be a one-dimensional. Get Lamar Jackson behind the sticks. Get him behind in the down. Get him into those third and seven pluses. And force him to sit in there and throw the ball and function as a pocket passer. To me, that will be the key to the Kansas City defense.
Rich, last thing. Lamar Jackson's been great so far his entire career, like Pat. He's only lost three regular season games. Two of those have come at the hands of Patrick Mahomes. Just from a mental aspect, how important is it that the Ravens and Lamar Jackson win this game? Because if not, you'd have to think Lamar's thinking, I don't know if I can beat this dude.
It's a great point. You know, you get these quarterbacks and these matchups and these rivalries that develop, even though that's not in the same division. But, like, you know, hey, Lamar Jackson's tired of hearing about Patrick Mahomes. You know, I'm sure he is, you know, and looking at where can he become a complete player at the position. And so this is an important game. You never know how. You know, there's only 16 of them. They're all critical. And then you never know if you get into these tiebreakers and the record, the home field advantage, and all that kind of stuff. They're important. You know, I think Lamar Jackson has to show that he can go up against another flamethrower like Mahomes and come out victorious. You know, and this will be a fair fight for him. And he's going to make some plays with his arm, you know, against this defense. Because, you know, I think when you play Lamar Jackson, you got to set the edge. You got to force him to sit in there. You can't let him run wild. You got to be disciplined with your eyes and your rush. And you just got to make him play quarterback. Take away his ability to pull it down and run as best you can, because that's really where the hidden yardage shows up. That's where the explosive plays show up. You start playing a lot of man coverage. Teams don't want to play a lot of man coverage versus Lamar Jackson, because everyone's got their back turned to the line of scrimmage running in coverage, and then he sees an opening, he pulls it down, and then there's 20 yards of green grass. I think you see teams put a little more zone coverage, try and keep things in front of them, try and have people keep their eyes on the quarterback, and when he decides to pull it down to be able to make sure you run. And the other thing about Jackson is, guys, he's not going to fly. He's not a slider. You know what I mean? He's a spinner, twister, fall forward type of guy. He's looking to get everything he can. He's not a guy that runs out of bounds a lot. He's not the biggest. I mean, you know, you look at him size-wise, you know, he's 6'2", he's 215 pounds. He's got kind of a thinner build to him. But I'll tell you what, he is tough and he's durable. You know what I mean? He doesn't take a lot of vicious hits. This will be a great one. I mean, everyone will be tuned in for this one, obviously, primetime game, and I can't wait to see it.
That is Rich Gannon, our MVP. He is also with CBS Sports joining us today to take a look ahead to the big Monday night game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens. Rich, always good talking football with you. Thanks for coming on today.
You guys are the best. Have a good one.
I thought it was some great analysis today from Rich Gannon, really breaking down the passing attack of the Baltimore Ravens and their rushing attack. We talked about it earlier. The rush is what makes that team go when it opens everything up. Once they start to run the football really effectively, they get one-on-one on the outside with Mark Andrews. They get one-on-one on the outside with Hollywood Brown, and it just makes them a nearly impossible team to defend. What the Chiefs have done a good job with against the Ravens is they've been able to control the fight. Their style has ultimately won out. This is going to be one of those styles make fights. Are the Chiefs going to play their game, or is Baltimore going to play theirs? Because I would say the way Baltimore plays theirs, it limits possessions for Kansas City. And that means that Baltimore is putting those 10 play, 81 yards. They take up 7 minutes on the clock and they just run the ball directly at the Kansas City Chiefs. Whose style can win this fight is ultimately going to decide the victor.
Yeah, this isn't your older brother's Baltimore Ravens team with Ed Reed and that great defense, Terrell Suggs and Ray Lewis and all those dudes. It is a good defense. There were three teams last year, Carrington, that had a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense at the end of the year. It was San Francisco. We know they're pretty good. They made it all the way to the Super Bowl. Baltimore and Kansas City, because these days teams don't really try to build elite defenses. There is no Steel Curtain. There is no Chicago Bears. There is no Baltimore Ravens from back in the day. You have to be a complete football team. If you're one-sided, you can put up a lot of points like the Chiefs did in Pat's MVP season, but can you win a Super Bowl? I don't know, man. You have to be good on both sides of the ball and throw special teams in there as well. And if you want to talk about the two teams up and down with maybe the two most talented rosters and the most complete teams, I think we're going to see him go head-to-head on Monday night.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. We'll react further to what Rich Gannon had to say, and we'll talk about how this is a quarterback matchup of the future. Before we do that, Sean, I would like to play a game with you very quickly. It's been a long time since we played a game. It's football season. The laughs are out the window. It's breaking down NFL football, but you know what? I've got a game for you today. The game is going to be very simple.
It better be Battleship today.
Caller 913-576-7610. I am going to play you five clips of fictional doctors. Right now, there's a doctor in the news because Tyrod Taylor, he tried to get a pain injection shot. He got his lung punctured by the team doctor.
It's funny because it didn't happen to me.
So I'm going to play very popular fictional doctors from 80s and 90s movies. I didn't go nothing too obscure. I didn't go something off the beaten path. I know your wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. I know your go-to move. So I'm going to play you these five clips. If you get four out of the five, nobody wins a free pizza from the other place. If you don't get four out of five, whoever Rob decides gets the free pizza from the other place, the 16-inch, go see my friends at the other place, they get the pizza.
Okay.
Very fair rules. Are you ready? In Who's Your Doc?
Yes, doctor, I'm ready.
Clip number one.
Hello, Clarice. You're one of Jack Crawford's, aren't you? May I see your credentials?
Who is that fictional doctor?
That's Dr. Hannibal Lecter.
That is Dr. Hannibal Lecter. I'll give you a bonus point here. What's the name of the movie?
That would be Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs here. I knew this was right up your wheelhouse. All right. Doctor number one, Dr. Hannibal Lecter. Hello, Clarice. Doctor cut number two.
You have a drinking problem, and I suggest that you stop drinking, because I think you might be an alcoholic.
Really?
Nobody likes a drunk monkey.
Sorry.
Who is your fictional doctor?
Yo, I don't know who that doctor was. I have no idea.
Rob, can you steal here? Hold on, I'll play the clip one more time.
Yeah, let me hear it again.
You have a drinking problem, and I suggest that you stop drinking, because I think you might be an alcoholic.
Really?
Nobody likes a drunk monkey.
Sorry.
You got the first fictional doctor. That was Dr. Hannibal Lecter. Second up and name that doc.
I don't know, Rob. You know who that was?
Dr. Doolittle.
That is Dr. Doolittle. I tried monkey. To give you the clip there. Nobody likes the drunk monkey. Mm. You know that he can talk to monkeys. Yeah. I tried to throw that. Mm. I know you've seen Dr. Doolittle right in your wheelhouse.
No,
right in your wheelhouse. All right. You have to get the rest of these, or whoever's on the phone line, I can't see who it is, they win a free pizza.
Okay.
Playing Who's Your Doc with Sean Levine.
We get the warhead and we hold the world ransom for $1 million.
First fictional doc was Dr. Hannibal Lecter. Number two was Dr. Doolittle. Who is Dr. Three in Who's Your Doc?
Yeah, that was from Austin Powers.
That is from the movie Austin Powers. What is the fictional doctor's name?
Doctor.
I'll play it one more time for you. I'll give you some time to think here.
Damn it.
We get the warhead and we hold the world ransom for $1 million.
We are playing Who's Your Doc with Sean Levine. Tyrod Taylor got his lung punctured by a doctor.
Yeah, no, I got it. Dr. Evil.
Okay, see, I gave you a little time there.
Yeah, Dr. Evil.
You were a little wobbly. You were a little shaky.
We're all right, though.
But you picked yourself up here. You have two out of three. You got to get these next two, or the caller wins a free pizza from the other place.
Give me a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
This is you. There's no chance if I play Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman that you would guess Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
That's true.
This one, if you don't get this one right, I don't want to talk to you anymore.
All right. This chick is toast.
Do you know who that fictional doctor is? I'll play it one more time for you.
All right. This chick is toast.
That's a tough one to get the name of.
You know what? If you give me the movie, I'll let you slide here.
It's Chris Farley.
That is not Chris Farley?
Well, then I don't know what the hell it was.
It was Ghostbusters, Dr. Venkman.
That is Dr. Peter Venkman.
You got that from that?
From Ghostbusters. I figured that was right up your alley. You love those 80s cult classic movies are right up your alley.
You gave me three words. It'd be one thing if it was 1, 2, 3, 4. Show me the money. Everybody knows that one.
I mean, I went to Ghostbuster clips, and it was Dr. Peter Venkman's best clips, and that was the first thing he said in the clip. I've never seen Ghostbusters, so I just assumed that was a very popular line from the movie.
Yeah, I've seen it a bunch, actually. I should have got
obviously,
that
you
one.
Haven't seen it a bunch because you didn't know
just
this
give
line.
Me the, okay, I lost. I still want right. to play the game. Give me the last one.
This chick is toast.
All right. One left in Who's Your Doc? I don't know if celebrating Tyrod Taylor's injury is maybe appropriately, but that's the genesis of this. This is the last fictional doctor, my friend.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
I know the quote. I don't know. Doc Brown.
It is Doc Brown. Back to the Future.
No Dr. Gregory House, no Dr. Doogie Howser, MD, no Dr. Dre, no whatever that doctor's name was from the Scrubs. I think those are all the doctors. Oh, Dr. Fraser Crane. I would have nailed Dr. Fraser Crane. So I lost, right?
I just want to point out I played the Darkwing Duck theme song and you called it Martin. So there's no
why you gotta bring that up?
There's no layup for you.
Why you gotta bring that up? That was
there's
over a
no
year ago.
Layup for you. Like I could play the jingle for Mousetrap. You're like, I've never heard this before. So let's calm down with you would have nailed those. I don't know if you would have nailed those.
That Darkwing Duck thing is the second most embarrassing thing. Well, the third. Remember when I said that in the state of Texas, the people had more tigers as pets than dogs? That'd probably be number one. That was not my most shining. Yeah, BK had a lot of fun with it. That was before all the Tiger King stuff. Like nobody. Yeah. And then I said that Benjamin Franklin was on Mount Rushmore. But what you just said was probably number three. Thanks for bringing it up.
Rick, you are the winner of
a
16-inch pizza from the other place. Congratulations for calling in and playing Who's Your Doc. Coming up, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Speaking of Back to the Future, we are seeing the future on Monday. I'll explain. Stick around. It's The Drive.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.